Hello everyone, my name's Anouk.
And my name is Laura.
And we're the co-hosts of the International Student Voices podcast, the ultimate guide for studying and living in the UK.
Today we're tackling a subject that Anouk and I have experienced really well, renting a house or apartment in the UK. From Leeds to London to now Cambridge, we've gained a lot of experience in this area, as well as tips and tricks for finding the perfect apartment.
Great, so let's get straight into the podcast. So basically, we can kind of start by talking about the types of properties you can rent in the UK. So obviously, if you're a student, the most basic one is student accommodations.
That's generally what you go for as a first year. You know, when you first arrive in the UK, it's generally the easiest option. We'll go through like the fact that included. It's a lot of advantages as a first experience.
Definitely. And especially if you're international, you probably won't know like where to look and that kind of stuff. Whereas the university provides student accommodation. So it's way, a lot of universities, there's different types of student accommodation, but a lot of them provide their own student accommodation, which makes it easier because it's on the website. They'll probably share like links with you anyways through their newsletter. So it's definitely the easiest option, at least if you're in your first year.
Definitely. But the subject we're tackling today is rental properties. So what you do next after living in student accommodation when you're looking for a flat or a house with some of your friends, that's the subject that we're kind of tackling today because we experience a lot of different things and I think could help you out if you're looking for a flat now.
Definitely. And it's also more difficult, I'd say, than student accommodation because it's very individual. Basically, you have to do the searching and there's a lot of different aspects to it that, you know, you wouldn't think of, but there's a lot of different things to think about.
Definitely. So the first thing that we can kind of talk about, so rental properties, you have like different aspects. So you can either rent a property through an agency or through a private landlord. I think it's a bit different. So if you want to go through like the agency, because I had to deal with like landlords and stuff.
Yeah. So agencies, I mean, they're quite simple. I feel like it's what most people are gonna go through anyways, and it's what you're gonna find online. So I don't think you should have to worry about like, oh, should I go through an agency or private landlord? If you Google it, all the like resources we're gonna share with you are agencies, because they're the most, you know, they're the biggest, they're most trustworthy in a way, because, you know, it's a big entity that have rented properties to other people, so you know you can trust them. And then Laura, you can talk about private landlords.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think like the only kind of difference that you have, like as Anouk said, you obviously don't know the landlord, you cannot Google him and kind of like find a lot of like different properties he rented or she rented in the past. But I would say that the communication is more direct and more chill. You're just gonna message a landlord, they're gonna like maybe do a virtual viewing or viewing, and then it would just be about sending documents and that's it, honestly. While the agency, sometimes the process takes a bit longer. I would say that's the main thing about like renting through through a landlord.
Okay, great. Now we can kind of go through more of the steps when you're trying to look for a house, an apartment, that kind of stuff. So we can kind of start with the housing options. So whether you're going to live on your own, with people, how to find those people. So a big website that a lot of people use is Spare Room. I'd say like that's quite a reliable website because it's something that I know a lot of friends have used. You've used it.
Yeah, no, definitely. Because like if we want to separate kind of like all the different options, if you, for example, don't have any friends to live with right now and you want to find people to live with, Spare Room is definitely a great option because you can buddy up with people.
Yeah, basically the way it works is that you create like a profile, and so you can post, for example, an ad being, or not an ad, just post something being like, I'm looking for this, this is my budget, this is the things that I, you know, these are the locations I want, these are the specific requirements, like if you want an ensuite, which means if you want your own bathroom, like you can basically say all of these things, maybe a little description about you, where you come from, and everyone else does the same thing, and it's really great because then you can message them and you get to kind of get an overview of what people are looking for.
Yeah, no, definitely. And another option would be Facebook group chats. We do have experience using Facebook group chats for finding properties, mm-hmm. or even just like flatmates. The two girls that we're living with this year are basically girls that we found on Facebook group chats, so it was amazing. But the way to go about it is just to post something on the Facebook page and people replying to your post, or just simply reacting to people's posts, because a lot of people are doing the same thing. They're just posting a picture of themselves, kind of similar to spare room in a way, and saying their budget, where they want to live, when, and then people, it's really great, I feel, like, when you don't have a group of people to live with.
Yeah, basically the difference is spare room, some parts of it you have to pay for. It's not that expensive, and obviously you can just pay for it for like a week, whereas Facebook group chats is obviously completely free.
I did pay for it.
You did? Yeah, I mean...
Even for reacting to...
Yeah, so did Jack.
So annoying. So, yeah. No, I spent 20 quid on spare room recently.
But to be fair, you can find people, so it's good. But yeah, Facebook group chats is the free version of it, kind of. And so it's really good because they've got different group chats based on, like, for example, specific areas. For example, if it's just students, they've got some for working professionals only. They've got some for girls only. So we found one of our flatmates through, like, a girls-only group chat, which are, like, really friendly and very wholesome, which is nice. We'll list all of these group chats on our website, iscpodcast.com, so you can check out our suggestions for at least London, because that's what we're looking for. Obviously, there's going to be other group chats. I think for Cambridge, you found some, perhaps?
Yeah, definitely. You have Facebook group chats for, like, every city you kind of, like, want to live in. And, yeah, no, you easily find them. Like, you just Google, for example, Cambridge accommodations or, like, Cambridge flats or... I don't know, and you find plenty of options. That's, like, very easy. And the thing that we think about, like, less often is also your social media.
Yeah.
Posting something on your story, like, I'm looking for a flat in Cambridge very soon.
Yeah.
We are
currently sat in Laura's room full of boxes, so...
It's been hell.
Very soon.
Since 2 days. But, so I literally did that. A friend that's also living in Cambridge reposted my story, and then someone literally messaged me, also looking for a flat in Cambridge, so we're all gonna live together, like, a flat of four in July. So that's great. I feel like you have so many options that you can kind of use.
For sure. And so that was the first option. If you're coming to a new city and you don't know anyone, then the other option is obviously if you come with people that you know, but you can't find a house.
Mm-mm.
And so we'll go through that afterwards. And then finally, kind of just finding a flat on your own. So if you don't want to live with anyone else, and if you kind of are having this dilemma of should I live with people or should I not, we actually have an episode on that. So feel free to check it out. I think it's one of our first 5 episodes, one of them, where we kind of discuss the good stuff and the bad stuff of
living alone. For sure. And yeah, so kind of like switching to the kind of documents you need when you're applying for flats. And I feel that generally when you're applying for, like, through agencies, you need way more documents, because, for example, landlords, I only needed, for example, my employment contract, my ID, and then very basic stuff. Well, agencies generally, they require a lot of different things. I would say references, so residential references. So, for example, if you're living in a student accommodation or you're already renting a property right now, just ask for your property manager to kind of, like, reference you. And guarantors, if you don't earn an income, that's sometimes it's like the double, the triple of your property.
I don't know how much it is, but it's an income that's, like, semi-high, and if you don't own that, then... you need to have a guarantor who will basically back you up, saying that, you know, they could pay if you don't pay.
Also, it needs to be a UK guarantor, like, especially for international students. I didn't know that. So if you can find someone that's living in the UK and that can back you up, that's generally what they're looking for. Then also sometimes they ask for banking details. Also, generally, that's for the proof of your address. So that could also be utility bills and other type of documents where your address is shown on the document. And then, I would say...
Yeah, they're quite good. Then in terms of personal stuff, there's also stuff like ID. So obviously making sure that you have a copy of your passport. And so all these documents, as you can see, there's a lot of ones, a lot of different ones. So what I would recommend is just having them all on hand, because when you're looking for a place, you want the process to be as smooth as possible and as quick as possible. Because today there is, like, as we're speaking, finding a house is so crazy, and you need to be so quick with these things that having them all ready to go is very, very important.
Yes, it's literally a struggle to find a house now. And I feel like, you know how they're talking about like the crisis, like housing crisis. It's actually true. And there is way more demands and way less properties on the markets. Like at least in Cambridge, for example, I went through so much, like I literally applied to more than 25 and got rejected for about 25 like properties we applied to. And we finally got accepted with one property. So it takes a lot of time. Sometimes the process can go really smooth, but Anouk is right by saying that you need to plan in advance, because when you're applying and all the people are fighting for the property, they're not going to wait after you, like if you take a lot of time.
Yeah, completely. And it's something that we learned as we were applying as well. And so bouncing back on kind of what you're saying, like the housing market and stuff, it is really, really tough to find places at the moment. So we have a few tips and tricks as well. One thing is basically to call up the letting agents and share your information with them. So what we were saying, like your budget, the how many people you want to live with, so how many like beds in the flat, the locations, and they'll basically email you then with basically properties that fit your budget in those areas. It can be every day, it can be every month, and it's every week, that kind of stuff. And it's really useful because sometimes it allows you to see them as soon as they're on the market. And because properties go so quick, like within 24 to 48 hours, it's important to catch them as early as possible. Even for viewings, I think I'd really recommend going for viewings if a property has been on the market, you know, as soon as possible, within the day or two, because if it's more than that, then it's a bit more risky and you might be losing your time.
Yes, definitely. I think that's what we realized when we were looking for flats in London. When we were taking maybe 2 days, the property was already gone. And they generally had, and it's not even just London, because Cambridge was the same, 20 viewings booked per day, like as soon as the house was on the market. So you, when you said calling the agent, that's actually, you shouldn't email the agent, maybe do both if you want, because they generally answer way quicker through phones, like when you're calling them, rather than when you're emailing them. So I think like that's definitely something you should do, like maybe both, so yeah, that they have like your like email address and like names and stuff.
Yeah. But and even throughout the process, I think it's really good to show that you're very motivated. So for example, if you found, before finding a house, I think calling them, you know, is good. And also once you found the place, checking up on them, so calling them up being like, hi, like how's the process going, has the landlord responded to our offer, that kind of stuff, I think is good to, because you're showing basically that you're really motivated. And sometimes they're also very busy, so it's good to call them to get, you know, an update on things, because maybe they won't think of updating you or they'll forget, and it's good to know where the process is at. And then I'd say as well, when you're very early on, calling housing agents is sometimes good, because then you'll get a housing agent assigned to you, and then they can, sometimes they'll even email you or text you with houses that aren't on the market yet. And so you'll get access. You'll basically be aware of which houses are there before they can even send you pictures, before they're on the websites, which means that you can either sign for the house before viewing or maybe book one of the first viewings, which gives you an early head start, which is very, very beneficial. And then finally, Laura, do you want to talk about the bidding process of properties?
Oh my god, because that's something that we realized when we were looking for a flat in London, that was actually the first time we were actually struggling to find houses and stuff. So we kept applying, and then the property wouldn't be selected, and one time it was just because someone bid like 200, like offered a little extra of like £200 or something.
Yeah. Which isn't a little extra.
Literally for like, yeah. And so that's when we realized, okay, so that's actually an option. So definitely try to think about if you can as well, or if the house is under your budget, that's when generally you can like offer a little extra. And that's how we secured as well a house in Cambridge and in London.
Yeah.
So because we were like literally rejected for so many houses. And then the only one where we got accepted was the one where we were able to actually offer a little extra. So that's something you can definitely do if you can as well. That's a great option.
Definitely. If you can, look for properties that are maybe £100 or £50 under your budget, so that you can offer that £50 or £100, because it does help you that little extra bit to, you know, guarantee that your offer will get accepted compared to the other people. Sadly, in the way things are going. And then I also just wanted to add, kind of similar to this, how we lost basically properties to bidding, we also lost a few properties to people offering more time. And so that's something that landlords really like as well, when you're signing for a place, that you're signing for longer than 6 months, longer than 12 months. And I think one of the places we wanted to get was 12 months initially, but someone offered 24 months and we lost it to that. And so what agencies will tell you sometimes to do is to do a break clause, which basically means that, for example, they would have, I think they offered us like 24 months with an 18 month break clause, which means that at 18 months you can end the contract, I think, with 2 months warning before. So you don't actually have to go through the 24 month contract, but you know, you probably are, because you're initially signing for the 24, but you've got an 18 month break clause. So that's something else to take into account, that sometimes people will offer more months, and so you might lose properties to that, and also what break clause means, because we had no idea when we first heard the word. So yeah. And then Laura, do you want to move on to maybe the costs?
Yeah, I think that's like one of the big questions about like renting a property in the UK. So you have like several things that you need to take in consideration. So one of the first thing would be, for example, the monthly rent. I think that's the most obvious one. So this will literally depend upon like where you're living in the UK, because you can have a very cheap house, but that's because it's just how much houses cost in this particular area.
Yeah, in terms of paying as well, it depends, because you know how, for example, in Leeds we paid per room, but right now we're paying per like the flat total. Oh, yeah. And sometimes, so there's different things, but basically you can either pay per room depending on what the landlord wants, or you have to pay one price for the whole flat, or you're allowed to divide it between yourselves and you can still each pay, you know, your own share of the house, but you're not paying for a specific room.
And yes, that's what we're doing right now.
Yeah, what we're doing right now. But I know that some people as well, for example, one person has to pay the whole thing, and so people will pay them back before they pay, you know, for the whole rent, month's rent. So it really depends on what your landlord wants. It's not really something you can decide.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. And that's what also we're going to do in Cambridge as well, because but I hope that like we'll be able to just each send our like rents.
Yeah, your share of the rent.
So yeah, and then like when you're applying, you have something called a holding deposit, which is different to a deposit. It's generally when you want to secure a house. So for example, when you found a house, you're really interested, you're done viewing probably, you talk to the agency, and you express your interest, you have the possibility to pay your holding deposit. And this is really great in the sense that the house is removed from the market, so no one has access to it, but for a short like period of time. So it's generally like 2 weeks maximum. And this holding deposit would be, if you do secure the house, if everything goes right with the references and stuff, it will be included in your rent, basically. You won't have to, for the first month, for example, that you're going to pay, it would be a bit less, because that would be it would be a holding deposit.
Yeah, and the only thing to remember as well for the holding deposit is usually when you pay it, you can't have it back. So if you're going to pay it, it means that you're serious about the place and you want to sign. You can't pay multiple holding deposits for different places, because then, you know, you might lose that money. So it's really when you're serious about the place and you want to show it, that's how you can do it.
Yes, no, definitely you need to be careful with that. And the only reason why they would give it back to you is, for example, if they if you lose the property somehow because of the references, they will give it back to you. Mm-hmm. But and then of course the deposits, so this is generally something that you pay when, for example, you live in the house for a year or something, if you scratch the walls, or if you, I don't know,
burn down the
somehow,
whole property.
Yes, somehow you break things, yeah, burn down the property, this deposit that you will pay will be removed. So will be taken out from you. The one thing I want to say is that you need to know if, and this will be included in your tenancy agreement, if the deposit is part of the deposit protection scheme. So that's very, very important, and it's a legal requirement. But trust me, some landlords are not doing it. And it was like, it came as like, literally like, it was obvious for my flatmates next year. They were like, obviously this house is part of the deposit is part of the deposit protection scheme. And I told them, yes, but let's like ask the landlord in case and have the written proof. And the landlord was like, no, you know, we don't want to go through like all this paperwork and stuff. And I was like, this is not about paperwork. It's just really important. So what's a deposit protection scheme is essentially is that if, for example, the agency or the landlord decide that you somehow broke stuff and they want to take your deposit out, if you oppose yourself to this process, there would be like a legal process going on, like people actually checking out if you're right or if the landlord's like wrong. Otherwise, if you don't have that, your money is literally gonna go into a landlord bank account, and if they wanna take your money, they will be like free to use, like to do whatever they want with it. Like,
yeah, and I've heard some bad stories of like landlords, for example, keeping the deposit money because there was a tiny scratch, or you were saying you left your bin as a present.
literally
like, took your money. Like, it's really bad.
We're gonna talk about that a bit later in the episode, but that's you need to be like really careful, like when you, but some agents are really honest, some are not, and same for landlords. So like careful.
One recommendation for that is to take a video, for example, of the whole bedroom when you first arrive, once you have the place, because that way you can prove that all the scratches, all the marks, because there will be some, people have lived in the house before, to prove that basically it was there before you arrived. And so if they do happen to be like, you did this, then you can prove that you didn't. And it's a very simple way to do it.
Definitely, and that's really important. And they will send you an inventory thing, like...
Yeah, an inventory, which is basically like a list of all the things in the house. So like how many glasses there are, how many chairs, that kind of stuff.
And and you can go through the pictures and actually sign or confirm that like everything's right or not. Like, you can also, that's something that they also do. And so in terms of other costs, you have like agency and administration fees. That's something we never experience in the UK, but you do have some agencies that charge you a bit more. It's generally not like a lot, just because you're going through an agency. Insurance as well, just for your stuff, the house would generally be insured, but like in terms of your own goods and things that you like moving in, taking with you, generally having an insurance is good.
Yeah, and that's part of like bigger bills as well, so things that you pay every day, like electricity and gas, water, wi-fi, council tax as well. You don't actually pay council tax if you're a student, but if you're a working professional, you have to.
Also, one thing I discovered, if you're living with PhDs, you have a reduction on your council tax. I didn't know about it. So, if ever you like living with PhDs, just be careful. Like, just notice. be careful. I'm like so like negative about the whole house situation. But
And also for bills, I have never seen a property in London that includes bills, but you can always check if it includes it or not. But that's also something for your budget to know. If you have a set budget, if you're looking at houses, if they come up to your budget, but then you've got bills which are £100, £150, I don't know, depends on how you're living, then that's a lot of money. And so you have to take into account that on top of your rent to make sure it works out for your budget.
Yeah, no, definitely. And so that's for moving in into a new property. But when you're moving out of the property, you also have to take into consideration several things. So one thing would be when you want to end up your contract a bit earlier. For example, if you have a 12-month contract and you want to end the contract at like after 6 months, it's possible. But generally, this would also be stated in the tenancy agreements. What's your rights? Generally you can, but you will need to swap your tenancy contract with another tenant, basically.
And I think it's up to you. It's up to you to find it.
Or you can pay the agency, for example, it's generally £50 and they will find a tenant for you. But you can also do it yourself. I had to do it first year of uni, and it's quite easy because people are always looking for flats.
And also sometimes even if you do find someone, for example, for this place, they did charge us, for example, for swapping tenancies, so that's something else.
And another thing would be move it out your stuff. We kind of like touch upon this, but so in the second flat I was living in, it was a studio flat, and the agency literally took out my deposits, like half of it, literally because I left a bin. There were a couple of things in, like, literally the flat was like clean, like nothing left, but it was like maybe one thing or two, and they took out like literally half of it. So I was just like, this is nonsense. But be careful with this, like, please kind of like empty clean your apartment when you're living.
They just want you to kind of leave the place as it was when you found it.
yeah even if you moved a bed or something like in the room, just like put it back where it was, because
you never know.
Yeah,
but in general I'd say have faith still in like people, because I feel like in Leeds it went like, for at least our third year house, it went completely well. We got the deposit back and yeah, it went
they were lovely. Yeah, literally, like such an amazing agency.
But, shout out Unipol in Leeds. And then to kind of finish off, we've basically mentioned already stuff like Spare Room. There's a lot of different websites out there to for house hunting, whether it's just in London or in general. So we've got a few listed on our website at iacpodcast.com. So feel free to check that out if you're looking for a flat and you don't know where to start, because we didn't either. So I think it's a good list to get started off. But then there's obviously like, these are the bigger agencies. There's going to be smaller agencies you can check out as well. So yeah, that's the end of the podcast episode for us. We hope you really enjoyed it. If you have any questions about house hunting, because it is very stressful and very complicated to understand, I hope we gave you a good overview, but feel free to message us on Instagram at ISV Podcast. And you can check our podcast on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and our websites. Thank you for listening.
See you in 2 weeks.
Bye.